and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, it's our first episode of the new year, even though we're almost at the end of January.
Yes.
It's been a while. Yeah, I was away for 5 weeks over Christmas and New Year's. How was Christmas and New Year's back here in Berlin, Witt/Wildau?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We had some snow.
Lots of snow.
And I had some friends over for New Year's. So yeah. I wasn't just by myself.
So you were good for New Year's Eve. Yeah, I kind of just sat at my computer working on New Year's Eve, and I was like, oh, it's 12:30. And I was like, ah, well, I guess that's my New Year's Eve.
Yeah, but you tuned in with us. Like, we FaceTimed.
Yes, we did. Then yeah, we were hanging out on FaceTime for my New Year's Eve.
For our New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
here.
No, I think it was already past my New Year's. No, it was just before. Yeah. Either way, doesn't matter. We don't need to go talk about what happened 27 and a half days ago. Let's get on to an episode. Let's talk about a book, because we've not done this for a while.
That's true.
I did some solo episodes. You listened back to some of them.
How did that feel like?
It was actually pretty good. I made more notes than normal.
Okay.
Because I was like, well, I don't have just... Because often I just have like a few notes or no notes, and we're just like, right, let's freestyle it, which is how I like the discussion to go.
Right.
But so often at the end of a two-person discussion, I listen back to it and I'm like, you took... like, because there's all these thoughts that are kind of in my head that when I listen back to the podcast, those thoughts are... secure in my head. They're like properly thought out in my head.
Right.
Because the act of me talking about the book to you confirms them in my head.
Yeah.
But when I'm listening back, I'm like, get to the point. Like, I do like this 5-minute diversion to land on something. But because I already know where it's going, it kind of gets a bit frustrating. So anyway, by making more notes, I hopefully have sorted out some of those things in advance. In the solo episodes.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, it was fun to listen to it. Yeah. I listened to it and...
I guess you don't normally listen to the podcast because you're on the podcast.
Yeah. So. Also, I was ill over New Year's and Christmas.
Yes.
And so I had time to listen to this podcast. And it was funny because there were a few things where, especially towards the end of the podcast, there was a certain end point, a natural end point.
Yeah.
And then you
of course
kept,
I went past it.
You moved again, and one more round.
Talking podcast, Ori on the SFBRP listener group here on, where is it, over here? Oh yeah, on the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads.com, Ori has been recommending some other podcasts. He says, hey, he said, check out, So Adrian Tchaikovsky Adrian Tchaikovsky, Emma Newman, they've got a podcast. Listen to it. And I was like, great. But for these people, they're authors. I want to get what they want to say through podcasts. No, not through podcasts.
Through
their books.
Yeah.
Through what they write as fiction writers. So he says, how about this one? It's, I don't know, someone else said, about Eden Coopermans, Luke mentioned on the Silmarillion episode. You know, I was listening to this podcast, which is called... can't remember now. Anyway, there was a podcast that I listened to about the Silmarillion, and one of the guys on there also has another podcast.
Right.
But it didn't click with me when I listened to one of the episodes.
Okay, that happens.
No offense to Eden Coopermans. Again, I liked his appearance on this other podcast, and the Meal of Thorns podcast, that was what he was on. But he started off the podcast with just a statement saying, nothing is new, and you know, the whole kind of thing, nothing is new, everything has been done before, and we're just like reworking stuff. And I was like, I can't take that as a basis of the fundamental layer underlying, you know, critical talk about a book that I haven't read yet, or whatever it is like that. So, I tried a few.
That feels a bit pointless.
No, it's not that it's pointless. It's just that, like, we'll get to this later on in the book, but I like people doing new things. And I think it's always possible to write about new things because new things happen in the world. New things are invented. Mm-hmm. New ideas are come up with. People do new things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you're writing science fiction or any fiction, you can, by writing about those things or even writing not about those things, we as readers can then read into those things new stuff. Like, so for example, at the moment, it's all about, you know, AI stuff in the world, and there's you know, so when that comes along, you can have a story which could not have been written before AI exists as it does now. And of course, AI has existed all the way throughout science fiction history, but now that it's trivially easy for an AI to pass the Turing test, like, new stuff is going to happen, you know, in fiction and things like that. So
Exciting.
So it is exciting. So if someone just starts their podcast saying nothing new can be written and nothing, and I was like, oh, anyway, bounce off. Anyway, so then he said another podcast, which was called, let's have a look here.
And now this is actually then Ori, is it?
This is now Ori recommending podcasts. Colin recommended one podcast, but Ori said, hey, you should check out Eleanor and Alasdair Read That. And the good thing about this is that these guys are not authors not science fiction authors where I'm just going to read their stuff. This guy is like, he's written a children's book or two or something, but they read childhood, children's books.
Okay.
Books for children. So for example, and the good thing is that the episodes are only half an hour long. They're well edited. They're two stand-up comedians or comedians doing it. So it's always entertaining.
Nice.
They've got some good bits, great banter between them. And like I say, I listened through to all of the episodes because I think there's only, you count them, like 15 episodes so far, half an hour each. So I finished them up on this last work trip.
I like their color choices.
The color choices are
very good.
But also they're reading books, not just from their childhoods, but also from my childhoods, because they are British, Scottish.
Okay.
Alistair is like grew up in Durham and I grew up in County Durham. He's like 4 years younger than me. Eleanor is much younger. I say much younger, but like, again, another generation down or whatever for me.
But it fits the context.
Yeah, so of course they're talking about stuff from their childhood, which is also my childhood, and, you know, and always, and they're like, oh, we didn't realise when we're going to do this, we're mostly going to be talking about British colonialism and racism. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, that's cool stuff.
Yeah.
So again, just the stuff that I'm mentioning now, it might feel like this is disconnected from the book review that I'm going to do.
I trust you.
You just trust me here.
Yep.
And let's move on to the next episode, or the next podcast that Ori recommended. Let's get over to back to Safari here.
You're in Safari.
Oh, I'm in Safari. Let me get back over to the correct tab, which is what am I looking for? No.
Luke is lost in his tabs.
He says also the Code Street podcast, best of 2025 panel. So in other words, get a group of people together and then they're going to talk about the books that stood out to them.
Okay.
In 2025.
Okay. So like a podcast.
Yeah, I managed to get through like about the first 10 minutes of this, but I was like, oh great, in the show notes they have all the books listed. So I'm like, okay, I don't need to listen to people giving like one sentence summaries of books that they like, and there was no further discussion.
So it's more like a compilation.
Yeah, well it wasn't they were just talking like, let's go round table, do a draft. Everyone has five, like just mention your five best books that you've read.
Okay.
Like we'll just go around in loops, you know, to do that. Which again, it's totally fine. Perfectly good podcast. It's just not, I've never really managed to get into that podcast. But
right.
Again, nothing wrong with the podcast. It's just what you link up with.
Not so much for you.
What you link up with. But it was, and I realized, oh, that's not the only podcast which has done this wrap up the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And also, all the people who write the blogs and all the people who do the reviews, they're all giving their best books of the year.
Yep.
And so from this and from other lists and this podcast and other podcasts and other lists, I don't need to go into them now. I made a list of books that came out last year, which I'll be like, these are the books that at the end of the year got the best reaction from the people who are, I'd say, adjacent to the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, who like have other podcasts about reading and science fiction books and reviewing books.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
People in the same sphere.
Okay. Yeah,
like,
we didn't make one of those podcasts.
No, we didn't. I mean, another Goodreads listener group post was like favorite books of the year.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And so here are some of the books that came up. Notes from a Regicide by Isaac Fellman, A Granite Silence by Nina Allen, Slow Gods by Claire North, Halcyon Years by Alistair Reynolds, The Everlasting by Alex Harrow, Rakes Fall by Vajra Chandrasekara. Should have practiced that name before I got through. And Luminous by Sylvia Park.
Okay.
So
how many were that now?
There's like six or seven books.
Okay.
And there were some other books, but those were the ones who were like at the top, you know, the top ones. There were some others which were like, maybe these ones as well, but they're by authors who I've read before and haven't been totally impressed with. So, you know, I can't give the benefit of the doubt that I will do to, say, Alistair Reynolds, who's one of my favourite authors, Claire North. We read one of her books as well, I think. Can't remember what it was.
Is that Harry August?
Oh, yeah. The First 15 Lives of Harry August.
Yeah.
Pretty good book. Really enjoyed it.
Mm.
Also, time looping book, which we'll come into later as well.
So these are books that came out last year, which you haven't read.
Which I haven't read.
But were mentioned in another podcast.
No, not just in another podcast. multiple other podcasts and other lists of best books of the year on blogs,
so
on
there's the best
Twitter,
of the best
well, not
ofs.
On Twitter, on Blue Sky, and on, you know, you look at Locus Magazine. What The Clark's World Magazine, who are the books that they all think. You know, all of these blogs, all of these review sites, all of these publishers, they all release book lists of favorite books from their reviewers or authors from the last year.
Yeah, so these are the best of the best of.
So then, anyway, put all of these, to sort them out, put them all into Goodreads to read list, sort by...
Rating.
Sort by rating. go by highest rating possible.
Okay.
Although, let me just show you this. If you organize it by lowest rating possible, check this out here. Oh, no. So here's the highest rating possible. Days of Shattered Faith, which is the new Agent Tchaikovsky, 4.4. But again, it's the third book in a fantasy series.
Okay.
So the people who want to keep reading the fantasy series,
they keep
reading it. It's self-selected people. Mm-hmm. Same with The Outskirter's Secret, The Lost Ears Woman. You know, these books are always going to be here at the top. Okay.
Yes.
And then after those ones was the book that we're going to read today, The Everlasting.
Okay.
By Alex Harrow. Weirdly enough, down at the bottom, check this out down here. Rakesfall. Which is one of the books. It's the lowest rated book that I've almost ever seen.
Okay.
Which is 3.03 stars for Rakesfall.
Like these six books that you just mentioned, they are new books.
Yeah,
so they will
rank
probably get some more generally just
well
some
I think
more
Rakesfall
rate.
Is kind of one of those like challenging books, like intentionally challenging books. But then it won the I was going to say, it didn't win the Arthur C. Clarke Award. It won the Ursula K. Le Guin Award or whatever it was.
It won an award.
So I'd actually have to, I can just click on it. It'll tell me, Goodreads is clever enough. It'll tell me.
What did it win?
It won the Ursula K. Le Guin Prize. So it's not an important book, but it's an award-winning book. It's not just a random book that's out there. It's well-known enough to win a literary prize. So.
Okay.
I'll get to it, but I am a bit nervous about 3.30 stars. Yes, and some other books there down. Anyway, so what I'm going to just say is all of these things will come together into this review here.
Okay.
So we're going to talk now about The Everlasting by Alex Harrow.
Right.
Which is a book that came out last year. Never read a book by Alex Harrow, but it has a 4.36 average rating.
Pretty good.
Not just pretty good, the best good. Like the highest good of all of these is it's very good, you know.
Did it also win all the awards?
No, it's not new. I think it was actually on the probably on a Goodreads Reader's Choice kind of award as well, like that.
Okay.
And I'm sure it will be on some awards because it feels like kind of it seems to be popular enough. Like, I looked at some people's Goodreads reviews as well, and some people are really into this book.
Okay,
like I mean, you have to be to get a high enough rating like that.
Yeah.
So I was kind of wondering, how am I going to get into this? Of course, I've just sneaked in lots of other ways to get into this book from this introduction that I've done. But the real way that I want to get into this book is to talk about some romance, because this is a romance book.
Oh.
When I went into it, I didn't realize how much of a romance it was going to be, but I'll make some notes about that. So let's talk about how we got together, how we met. How did we meet? Let's talk this through.
That's unexpected.
No, I know, but again, just trust me on this one.
We met via a website answered questions.
It was an app. It was a website app. This was before Tinder and apps and stuff.
Forums.
This was called OkCupid. Now, the way
that still exists, but at our time, it was still for free.
Yeah, it was a free app. Anyway, but the way this works is that you tell the app, you tell the website about yourself by answering questions about yourself.
Yes.
Like, and also, you don't just answer the questions that you want to, that about yourself. You also say, how important is this question for me about other people, and also what answer would I want them to give? Don't match them up with someone who has the same answer as me. Like, this is my answer, but this is what I would want in somebody else.
Yeah, you can shape how spicy you want your relationship to be. Do you want to fight a lot? Do you want to ignore parts of your partner's opinions?
I don't think it's do you want to fight a lot.
No, but the algorithm is set up in the way that you have one part is like, I forgot how it's called, lover and friend and enemy, whatever it was
so
called.
So the point is about this is... We got to know each other, like, weirdly in advance because we, like, I already knew the kind of things that you would, Like, again, it's, I'm just trying to say, on a technological point of view, it's sort of like it gets a lot of that flirting filtering out of the way in advance, the OkCupid app, because it matched us up. But, okay, here's the thing. What if we'd have met and I didn't know that you had filled out all the questions about yourself?
Yeah.
How about if we'd have met and I discovered that all of the stuff that you'd written about yourself in your profile,
yeah,
and all of the answers to all of the questions that you had given,
yeah,
in fact, I had done that. I had filled out your profile, and also I had answered all the questions that you should have been asked, but I just answered them in the same way that I wanted to, that I wanted you to have done.
What?
Again, stick with me here. And then
crazy.
I fell in love with you in advance of meeting you,
right,
based on the answers that I wanted you to give, that I had written the answers, and also your profile on the website, which I myself had written out.
And I had nothing to say about it?
No, you didn't have anything to say about it.
Okay.
You're just there as a person, but I have written your entire backstory, and I've written about your character, and I've written about your strengths and weaknesses, and I've written about how good you are at this and how bad you are at this, but of course I haven't written it that you're bad about anything, because of course I wouldn't write that you're bad, because I'm writing something which is public facing.
Okay.
And then, before we even meet, I fall in love with you to like a level of obsession.
Yeah, okay. It sounds quite like that could be happening.
Okay, so this is kind of weird.
It's really
and
wishful
creepy.
Thinking.
That's what this book is. Okay.
Really?
So yeah, the setup of this book is, again, mild spoilers for whatever, but again, we already listened to a podcast about this. You'll remember it.
But I
what
can't
happens
remember
is,
that.
What happens is someone is told, we're in like a fictionalized country where they need a founding myth. They need their King Arthur, or they need their Romulus and Remus and Romulus. Mm-hmm. They need their whatever it's going to be, whatever their founding myth is. And the leader of the country is like, all right, we need the founding myth to have these values and this person do these kind of things. Because at the moment, the politics that we want to have, like the politics that I needed now, is that we need these people to be our enemies and these people to be our friends. We need these values in our hero.
Okay.
And you're going to write the book. You're going to translate the book. But also, I'm going to send you back in time in a fantasy timey-wimey way to meet the person and actually write the book for real. And then when you come back into this timeline, you're going to then translate what you wrote back then, because we're going to find this book again. You know, the whole kind of thing where you open up the new part of the castle and you find the book and you're like, here's the original story. You know, this has happened many times over.
So they go back in time, and there is a real person. There's
okay,
a real
so
founding
thing is,
fathers.
So our main character,
right,
whose name is, fuck it, I don't know. Let me have a look. I'm going to look on the.
You're always so good at this.
Look, they always have this thing, book thing. They have. I was going to say. So Owen Mallory. Do you recognize the name Mallory?
Yes.
From.
I don't know.
Writing Arthur, King Arthur legends.
Oh.
The death of Arthur, isn't it?
Right.
That kind of stuff. Mallory.
Yeah, Mallory, whatever. Yeah.
Either way, so Owen Mallory is our MC, our main character.
Oh, that's like a wink.
What? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
lots of winking
like
in this book.
Like a big wink.
And he studied at Camford University. Anyway, so he's been sent back in time. He's been sent back in time. He's been sent back in time to be there to actually meet our past hero, who is a knight called Una, Sir Una, who's a a lady knight. And so she was the orphaned girl who became a knight, who died for queen and country. Her legend lives on in songs and in stories, in children's books and recruiting posters, but her life as it truly happened has been forgotten. So he's been sent back.
But that person really existed.
So, yes.
Okay.
Let's say she really existed in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sent back in time to meet her, to write her story back then in like Middle English or whatever it is, or, you know, oldie English, write it, and then they're going to bury that book in the foundations of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward 900 years, they're going to dig up that book, find it there, and then he's going to be given it, and other people are going to be given it, to translate it to find out the real truth, thumbs up, real truth about Una Everlasting.
Which and happens to fit the narrative.
That happens to fit the narrative that the politicians at the time want. Now, okay. This setup, I think, is great. This is really, really good.
Okay.
But when he goes back in time, he meets someone who isn't like the person in the book.
Right. Well,
but
obviously.
He's already pre-fallen in love obsession with her.
Ah,
and
right.
And so we get this long, drawn-out, one-third of the book of them just traveling around. They meet up and there's nobody around, and they travel around and they meet some other people, but they're not important. It's just two people and a horse, like, just getting on with going north to find a dragon. That's all they're doing.
Dragon.
Forget it. Don't worry about it. They're going north okay. to find a dragon because the dragon has a grail, and they have to find the Holy Grail. And when they get the grail, they're going to bring it back, and it's going to save someone's life because they're going to whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a fantasy quest. It's a fantasy Arthurian legend quest
right.
kind of thing.
Okay.
And Una Everlasting, she's already done the conquest. She's already done a crusade. She's already done these other things. She's killed lots of dragons. Now there's one final dragon. She's going to go up and kill the dragon, get the grail, and when you drink out the grail, it is going to give somebody else. Some gonna heal them, and the queen is gonna live, whatever it's gonna be.
Cool.
All right, that's one third of the book mostly traipsing around
mm-hmm.
with a guy meeting someone who he's already fallen in love with and is then infatuated with, and then is like super infatuated in love with her already. She's doing stuff and is miserable, and she says something which is like racist, or so something which is not maybe not racist, but she says something which isn't good. Like she was like admitted that she was drunk or whatever. And he, in the book that he's writing, lies about her.
Right.
Writes his own propaganda mm-hmm. that he himself is going to translate in the past or
in the future. Yeah,
in the
yeah.
future, in his past, in the future, and he's writing it down. And I'm like, oh, so the legend. Like, the person that you fall in love with, and he literally just writes lies about somebody, writes it down, and when he's once the future is changed, mm-hmm. he doesn't have any memories of this.
Mm.
So the books he's reading, the stories he's reading, is filtered through his own propaganda, his own storytelling about somebody who is in front of him. He knows he's already infatuated with them because of these stories, but he himself has written those stories. So it's like this... It's like this stupid Ouroboros or an Ouroboros, or again, so many, I've heard so many different pronunciations of it.
Ouroboros.
An Ouroboros, an Ouroboros, an Ouroboros.
Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce
it. A guy falling in love with his own fan fiction of a Arthurian legend adjacent kind of person.
Right.
So what I thought was going to be happening was the cool, hey, this is about, you know, Orwellian storytelling. You know, in that case, it's always about, and you can, like, they don't go back and change the past. They change the past by rewriting it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this is great. It's going to be like a, you know, this is how you lose the time war thing, but with, you know, propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go back and change the story or rewrite the story back then. And that's, like, got, like, 900 years worth of history based on your writing, so it's like deeply ingrained into the spirit of the country and the vibe of the country.
That's like the core of propaganda.
And it felt like that's what the book might have been about, and it feels like about one tenth of the book wants to be about that. But as all this was happening, I wrote a note which was like, this is not clicking with me. And I wrote here, this is what I wrote at the time, about a quarter of the way into the book. It feels like it should be good, but I'm not identifying with the main character, nor the secondary character, which is actually a second main character, which is Una. You get some stuff from her point of view later on as well. I don't really care about the book, in other words, the book he's writing, or the war, which is stuff going on, or the protests, because people are protesting the war that's going on in the modern world, or the empire, and I put empire equals bad, of course. Because, of course, it's empire, and empire equals bad. Of course it does.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying, like, in books which are written in 2025, any mention of empire equals bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it was taking so long, and I realized, oh, all of that's kind of been put on pause now for me to read a character who I'm not interested about, who has fallen in love with a character who isn't the character he's with now.
And he's not changing then his perception.
No,
of
he's
her.
Still in love with them, and I was like, oh, now she's doing the romance part of this. So I was like, let me look it up, and of course I looked it up, and it says romanticy of the year. You know, and it says here genres: fantasy, romance, romanticy. Romanticy is now the genre, like young adult fiction was a few years ago, which all other science fiction and fantasy is now just a subsection of that, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Like, everyone's getting into fantasy now is via romantasy, you know, that's just what's happening. Again, not any problem with that. But yeah, fiction, time travel, historical fiction, audiobooks, something, whatever. So I was looking up, I was like, oh yes, so this is being classed as like romance is right there, you know, fiction romance. So I was like, all right, let's go with it. I was just like, okay, let's forget about this stuff. Let's just go with the romance part.
Right.
And the romance is just not, I just couldn't get into it.
Okay.
And it starts, and suddenly, because it's about a guy who's obsessed with someone, and I'm like, but he's not obsessed with her. And then I was like, oh. And I was like, and it was slowly dawning me, this isn't the first time this has happened. This is one of those, you know, stated in this. And I was like, the reason why, by the way, he was like in the First World War, or he was in a war, First World / Second World. He was in kind of a world war kind of thing in the modern world.
Right.
But he was really good. And even if he didn't want to, he would just shoot his gun and kill people left and right. And I was like, oh, he's already doing the Groundhog Day. He's already gone through the Groundhog Day here.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, he's already done the Edge of Tomorrow. He's already done the Tom Cruise stuff. And also Una is all, she's all amazing with the sword, and I'm like, oh, we're just doing it. And she's who's the actress in that one? Either way, in the movie, it's what do they call her? Don't remember. Either way.
I don't know.
No, because she's the
what?
No, I'm trying to think, because it's a reference to Groundhog. Anyway, it's all Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Like this guy is already the Rachmaninoff. Edge of Tomorrow, sword fighty, shooty stuff. Like,
yeah,
that, he's already a superhero, but doesn't realize it.
Rita, the name.
Oh,
is
Rita. That's it. Yes, of course, Rita, because Rita is the main character
in Groundhog Day, yeah.
And in Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes.
So it's Rita and whatever Tom Cruise's name is.
Yeah.
Emily, what's her name?
Blunt.
Emily Blunt. So it's Emily Blunt. So Una is just Emily Blunt, and he is sort of like idiot Tom Cruise or Phil from Groundhog Day,
yeah.
Who doesn't realize that, but because he has lost the memories, but he's still got a shooting skill because he's been through the war so many times,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it does. And so this was this dawning realization to me 25% of the way through the book. That was like, oh, this is one of those. He's already fallen in love with her multiple times in the past, mm-hmm. and he's on a time loop novel. He just can't remember the past, but he has been because he already knew all the shooting stuff. He could already magically shoot things perfectly. He already had the shooting skill that he didn't have to learn. He could just do it.
Right.
And now he's writing this book, and I was like, oh, this whole thing is just in his head. And of course, spoilers. That is the setup for the book, but. And I've mentioned this many times before when I've reviewed time loop stories and in time loop stories that I've written myself and time loop stories of the thing, that the first loop has to either be really short before we find out that it's a time loop, not just a time travel story. Mm-hmm. It has to be really short, or it has to be a very, very, very good version of something for a while. So
it needs to be convincing.
No. Convincing. Well, no, it's always the thing. I've made this point many times with these time loop novels, that if you're going to do a time loop story, the first time that you go through the day or through the year or whatever has to be interesting to the point where Edge of Tomorrow is exciting action up until the point where Tom Cruise dies and he's reset.
Yeah.
It's doing a lot of work. Groundhog Day, Bill Murray... It's a funny, cynical, deadpan Bill Murray comedy.
Yeah, it's everything builds on what we have seen in the first loop.
So that, no, but it's not just that it builds on the first loop. That first loop has to be a good example of some form of genre of storytelling.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a war story loop, that first loop has to be very good war story.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards we're like, and now we can play around with the time. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be Bill Murray cynical comedy, someone from a big city going into a small town and not fitting in and thinking,
yeah.
Everyone's
an
idiot.
You think that is the story.
You think that's the story. And of course, by the end, it turns out war is not the answer. Although, I guess war is the answer. It turns out, no, everyone here does have their own story, and you're just part of everybody else's story. You're
and
not
also
the main
by,
character.
By doing things often enough, you as a person can grow.
Yeah, you grow as a person, whatever. So, as I was doing this, I was like, well, this has to be, for this to be working, this has to be really good. This has to be really good romance, mm-hmm. or it has to be really good historical fiction, or it has to be really good fantasy. Unfortunately, it's none of those. It's just really long.
Okay.
One third of the book with these two people just traipsing around on a horse, getting into colder and colder places. And I was like, is this just? I was like, is Is this just not for me? Like, is romance just not for me? But I, again, other books with romance in, I'm really into. But it did feel like the idea that I thought the book would be like, oh yeah, propaganda something. Because we listened to that Critical Friends podcast, and they had two people who'd written reviews of two different books, and both of them had the idea of rewrite the legend of our nation to serve our political stuff at the time, like now. But all of that was just dropped for about a quarter of the book as these two people just don't fuck. And I was like, come on, guys. You should have had sex like 18 pages ago. And they just don't. And they just don't. Because he's all like, oh no, I love her, but she's all blonde.
He sounds horrible.
He's not horrible. He's just boring. It's just not good. Anyway, and then out of nowhere, they're like touching each other, but like not touching each other. And she's got a hand on her and it's sort of like, oh, her hand's getting close to my pubic hair underneath my shirt or whatever it is. And they're doing this. And then it just out of nowhere just drops the C-bomb. And I'm like, wait, so now you can smell her lady parts, but like just... And I was like, this is language that should be like way later in the book once you're already used to each other. Because now it's super creepy that you're smelling her... I just don't want to drop the C-bomb here, because when it happened in the book I was like, oh, and I was like, what's going on? And then it just moves on. I was like, oh no, that's really bad. So anyway, had to check it out. So in the end, I was reading a creepy story about somebody who'd written a dating profile about somebody else himself over and over. And then, yeah, it does. They're magically linked, and I put it here, but also pre-infatuation using time travel knowledge to insinuate himself into the life of a romantic target. Sort of like, yeah, he already knows
like
everything.
The creepy stalker, but 500 times worse.
This is what the people in these other time loop stories find out, that you can't use your creepy time travel stalker to make the woman fall in love with you.
Yes.
That's kind of...
It's one of the rules.
It's one of the rules of time travel love stories is don't do it. And I was like, time travel romances. I had this similar issue with the time traveler's wife.
Yes.
And I was like... I don't like it when somebody already knows so much about them and they're like, ah, yeah, but I met her when she was 9 years old and now I know her, she's 15 year old, but her parents say, well, you can't fuck her until she's 18 year old. So I waited until she was 18 years old and in the time travel and then I fucked her. But like, she took my virginity, but I didn't take her. And I'm just like, it's all this. Anyway, not too bad, but just kind of creepy. So anyway, at this point, I was like, well, let me just research a bit about like romanticy and stuff. And I looked a bit. This is before I'd even got to the first end of the time loop. And I was like, is this what people want? And yeah, people talking about yearning. And I was like, oh, this, you know, because I looked at a review of this book and people was like, oh, the yearning. And I'm like, yearning. In other words, fake fictional situations where you're in love with someone and infatuated with them and do anything for them and love them and hold them on a pedestal, but they're out of reach in some way
They are not the person that you are doing the obsessing about.
He wrote the story of the thing that he's yearning for.
Yeah, no, but the way that I understand it is that she is not actually like that. She is a her own person, but yeah. He doesn't love her. He loves an idea.
Honestly, I don't know. It wasn't clear enough. So anyway,
okay.
A third of the way through the story, the time loop stops. And then we get the next part of the story from Una's point of view.
All right.
Also, unfortunately, all of this is written in second person. And I'm like, why is this all written in second person? And I was like, it feels very much like Alex Harrow read This Is How You Lose the Time War, which is two people writing stories to each other, and you have these little sections in first person or third person. And then it's these things writing. And that's what this is. It's sort of like these two people writing the stories to each other, but it doesn't make sense because at one point when that happens, their memories are reset. So I'm like, well, when was this story written? And then I'm like, oh, maybe later they regain the memory. Anyway, it doesn't make sense. It honestly feels like, and also these two people, one is from like the Middle Ages and speaks a different language and is a woman. Mm. And the other one is a guy from, you know, the middle of the 20th century-ish times. Again, it's a bit messy or whatever, a bit timey-wimey, whatever.
From Camford.
Their internal monologue, their second person, it's often very difficult to tell apart. And I'm like, oh, it's exactly the same issue that I had in This Is How You Lose the Time War, where two people, there was like a robot and a fairy talking to each other or whatever it was. And this is sort of like a woman from the Middle Ages and a man from the 20th century, and it's just written in the same voice. And I'm like,
that can't be. They're different people.
They're different people, but it might as well. The only thing that's different is the physical point of view of what is visible from the eyes of the character. Mm-hmm. So we then, for the next quarter of the book, we get the same traipsing north, two people and a horse, just from the other point of view. And we see that, oh, at that point when he was really horny, she was horny as well. And also it changes slightly as well, because this is the next loop. So we get it from the other point of view.
It's
they're a little
loop.
Bit closer to fucking, but not fucking. And a little bit closer to this, and a little bit more touchy-feely, a little bit more open with the mind. Like, oh, man, just get on with it. So,
But to be honest, I also have a big problem with thinking that she would be into him.
I honestly don't know what she sees.
How?
The only way it makes sense is because this is love destined through time, epic storytelling. So, but the point is, we're reading about two people who have fallen in love over the course of many time loops.
Right.
But we're seeing them part way through those time loops.
Okay, we don't meet them in their first and then in the middle and in the last.
Yeah, wouldn't it be good if we met them the first time that they met? But even the first time that they met, they have this weird connection to each other that we don't find anywhere. And then the story just starts fast forwarding. They're like, all right, another time loop, another time. It just fast forwards this. And then at that point, they're like, well, we'll just... At some point, the writing switches from second person... In other words, you do this, you do this, and you go, you do this, you do this. So it sounds like, you know, you're on a sex phone call or whatever.
Oh,
just to and then they just go, how about we just switch to third person and just tell this next part of the story? And they're like, yeah, let's do that. And
who,
I'm like,
who decides that?
The characters in the book, the second person narrators in the book just decide, let's just go for third person from now on to the end of the book. And I'm like, you can't. And I was just like blown away. I was like, oh, I didn't realize the author could just be sick of the second person narrative. Tell the audience, hey, we're sick of the second, like tell the readers, or in this case, the listeners, an audiobook. Hey, are you sick of this second person narrative? All right, let's just move on. And just moves on with the second person, like just moves on with third person narrative. Then Una did this, and then, you know, and then he did this, and she did this, and he did this, and
okay, that then sounds like they then switched to then reading out the book that was written about them.
Honestly,
or something.
It just felt like somebody had written half a novel in second person and thought, this is a bit annoying. Okay. I'm going to switch to third person because it's easier, because I've got to get through more stuff and I can't always be having you do this, you do this to talk about what the other person's doing in the scene all the time. So they move on. Anyway, fast forward time, Cheryl. They just kind of give up on any stuff. I said, just give up. Just freestyle it. Fuck it. They have full control and now they can keep their memories. So at this point, they've got a book which can make them travel through time by stabbing themselves in the head or dropping blood on the book. They can both just go travel through time, forward, backwards. They can decide when they're going to have their baby. They can decide when they're going to do this. It's
they
just something...
a baby.
Oh, I'll get onto that in a second. So they just decide... All the time travel stuff that we were doing before is now just... Chuck it in the bin. Don't care about that. Rules of time travel don't exist. We can now just go anywhere. And they just magically now, because it was magically that they lost their memories between time loops after they, you know, once they reset. But now they just keep all their memories and just go on. I was like, oh, you're just good at this now, are you?
Are they the only people who have that ability?
No,
that?
But again, I didn't get to the point where it was going to come back into the story. I gave up on the book before then. So you're gonna build it up. This is yearning love story romance.
Right.
And I was like, this is taking a long time. Let's get to this sex scene and let's have some horny sex scene. And it's fine, whatever. It's not even that. I can't even remember it. It's not like the other romance book that I read. I can't remember what it was called, where they had cigarette hash over each other. I can't remember. Ministry of Time, Ministry of the Tomorrow. What was it called?
Ministry of Time, probably. I have.
Yeah, Callie and Bradley. And then I'm like, that's at least making me slightly horny. This book is doing nothing.
There's some very funny videos on Instagram sometimes that are showing when there's descriptions of the woman holds the hot thing in the hand. So, and then but this is important. And then they're showing it and she can't put her hands around, both hands around.
By the way, you're saying this out loud now on a podcast, by the way.
Well, that's not, but I'm just describing.
Okay, I'm just making sure that people understand.
Anyway, and then the women are like in the videos take things
which they can't get their hands around.
And it's like, okay, okay, and it's like,
yeah, but some people have small hands, and some people have big things that you can't get your hand around.
No, that's just not how it works.
No, okay,
really not. Anyway,
I mean, it doesn't work that way for me either. But I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure what they're going.
That's a funny thing about romantic sex scenes.
Romance doesn't matter. Romance, fine. Actually, at some points, it was more affecting. Like some of the earlier bits where they're like, you know, a bit like,
will they one day?
Will a bit? Yeah. Some of the will they, won't they? I thought was quite tantalizing. But actually, when they got to the actual sex scene, it was already in that like fast forwardy part of the story. So I'm like, and now loads of time has passed and they're gonna finally have sex, and then the sex scene comes up. I was like, that's not how you do romance. You've got to, like, that part where they finally decide to have sex, that's like the most important, like, that's what Kellyanne Bradley did with the ministry. They finally get there and they finally do it, and she's like, I didn't think you wanted to have sex with me. And he's like, a man out of time. And so I'm like, I've been courting you for 6 months. I've been cooking you food. I've learned how to cook to become the man that you want to have sex with. And you just, and so you finally get in this book, it's sort of like, oh yeah, all right, so yeah, by this point, yeah, they're probably gonna have that sex about now, right? And so now at this point they finally gave in and had sex with each other. I'm like, that's not, I don't want the scene to be the way. Anyway, within 20 minutes, so the sex scene, I made a note here, the first sex scene happens within 20 minutes of the audiobook. And to be honest, I wanted the sex scene to be more than whatever long. You know, good sex scene should last a bit longer than that. We were to the first encounters of missed periods and abortions within 20 minutes. So this is a romantic love story. We spent like over half, two-thirds of the book getting to the point where they've had sex for the first time.
Yeah.
And then they immediately fast forward through months to years of their relationship going past.
Right.
Till by the point where that she gets pregnant, misses a period, then travels to the future to get some, you know, abortion pills, and comes back, she has abortion. And then,
why would she have an abortion?
Because they're being chased through time by the evil princess or whatever. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm like, what a buzzkill to go from your first and only sex scene of this romance so far to taking abortion pills within 20 minutes. And I'm like, where's the honeymoon period? Where's the next time that they have sex? Where's the third time? Give me another hot sex scene. Make them fight and then make up by having sex again. But it just didn't happen. And I'm like, I'm reading a romance here. Give me the hot sex again. Like, the first sex wasn't, it didn't build up. And now
tragedy.
I'm reading about people having abortions. And I'm like, I'm not feeling good anymore. 20 minutes ago, I was hoping to feel more horny than I am now. And now you're talking to me about having abortions. And then they decide, oh, okay, let's not have an abortion. Let's have a baby now. And I'm like, fuck it. That's 22 minutes. We've gone from, like, having sex for the first time to abortions and having kids within 22 minutes. Minutes of the audiobook. It's like the same chapter. I'm like, at least, well, no, it might not be the same chapter, but I'm like,
that's
the
intense.
Next chapter 22, have sex. Chapter 23, three abortions and a baby's on the way. Anyway, I stopped reading because I didn't like it. It just, the whole thing just fell apart.
Right.
Mostly, and again, I haven't even talked about the dumb politics and the history building and even the science fictional. I did talk about the time looping stuff and the stuff. But really, this is a romantasy. Not actually that much fantasy in it. And the romance, just doing nothing for me.
They're chasing a dragon.
Spoiler alert, the dragon's just a dumb lizard that she can just go in and stab with a sword. It doesn't even fight back. It's the saddest dragon fight I've ever read in a fantasy book.
Aww.
Like, it's so, it's sort of, you know, because it's making a statement. It's all like this, you know, 2025, the world is on fire, so everyone has to be nice. She's like really regretfully going up there. Oh, it's really bad. This is the last, you know, it's like the, you know, the extinction credits from, what is it, the thing. Like, oh, if I kill this dragon, it's going to be the last one. Well, I killed all the rest. Well, I guess I'll kill this one because we got to fulfill the prophecy, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And it's like this really it's the dreariest, most pathetic dragon slaying I've ever read in, like, how long I've been reading fantasy? Since fucking The Hobbit, you know, like I read The Hobbit when I was a kid. You know, you do the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. You do all this like, fantasy. I go into fantasy, like properly reading every fantasy book from the library when I was like 11 or 12 years yeah. old. How many Going to Kill the Dragon stories have you read in that time? Like loads. Huh. And also, half of the novels are like really quirky about it. So I'm like, it's not really a dragon. It's like an old dinosaur. Oh, it's not really a dragon. It's a rhinoceros in a costume. Oh, it's not really a dragon. It's just sort of like whatever lizard that they had here. You know,
it's
like
a misunderstood creature.
Yeah. Half of the dragons that I've ever seen killed in a fantasy are misunderstood creatures. So it's not even fun in this book when the dragon's a misunderstood creature. But it's sort of like, oh no, we're going to save it from extinction. It's like dragons should be killed. The whole point of all dragons is that they are dangerous and should be killed. And if your story is, it turns out dragons shouldn't all be killed, you have to do, like, that has to be what the story, not has to be what the story is about.
You have to put a bit of work into it.
You have to put a bit of work into that. You can't just be like, oh yeah, the whole prophecy says and the history, like, he's already like, Mallory is already like, oh yeah, I already know you're going to kill the dragon. He's sort of like, oh, but I want to save you, even though he's like, she goes in there, just sort of like, the dragon's like, ugh, he's all old, and she just stabs it and just goes, well, that was easy. Yeah, saddest dragon killing. Anyway, fantasy. Not good fantasy. Romance. Not good romance. Put them together. This is my first book that I've read, which is like explicitly romantic-y.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't just sort of like, you know, sex adventures in middle-agey kind of fantasy world. It's yeah. actually properly like, oh, I'm destined through
time. And also you forgot the science fiction part.
Well, yeah, whatever.
The time you'll be winding.
Well, I'll get back to this. So anyway, so that's my main review of the thing. Now, I do have other major issues with it, but the reason I stopped reading wasn't some of the main other issues. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even that the time looping was bad. It was that you can't get to the point in a fantasy where it's sort of like, oh, yeah, this is probably the point in the book where they should have had sex by now, so let's just have them make them have sex. Mm. And you can't skip directly from then. The next chapter can't be abortions and children on the way. There has to be something, because you can't just, like, it was so excruciatingly slow how they were just meeting for the first time and getting on a horse, and like every moment was being described twice because we had it from the other point of view as well in the next few chapters, or like next quarter of the book was just the same story from the other like it was so like in there and sort of like, and I was like, at some point in this story they're gonna have sex, but isn't it sort of like it's in that fast forwardy through, let's just move on with it, and that's just not where the sex scene has to come in a fantasy book for me. Sorry.
I think if people want to really read some good fantasy romance, they should read Outlander.
Yeah, I've not read that, but again,
just saying,
everything that I wanted from this book, which is sort of like, yeah, give me an Outlander, or even, you know, like I say, that Kellyanne Bradley Ministry of Time kind of thing.
Yeah,
like I had issues with that book, but it wasn't about the romance part wasn't the bad bit, except for that they kept on like dropping cigarette ash on them, when I was like, stop describing cigarette ash being dropped on people's penises or whatever.
What?
Not quite. Yeah. So yeah, I did make some other notes here. Big picture, this feels like the framing of this is that you have to push back against fascism, rising fascism, push back against it. You know, like I said before, it felt a bit Big Brother at the start, where mm-hmm. the narrative is being controlled by some central authority, and it's the head of an empire as well, so there's all that kind of stuff. Turns out, mild spoiler, the whole thing is just a stupid cartoon, single cartoon villain, one person pulling the strings behind everything. And I'm like, that can't be what pushing back against fascism is based on if there's only one person who's the head of it. The whole point of the you know, these fascist regimes, it's not just one stupid, you know, cartoon villain. It's actually a whole society being built up around systems which are based on these lies.
Yeah.
But it's you have to fight back against the whole system.
Yes.
Rather than one person with a magic book.
Generally, the person in the front is the puppet.
Well, it doesn't have to be a puppet, but they can be a figurehead. But yeah. if you just kill that figurehead and everything is solved...
No.
That isn't. That's like the fantasy of the Inglorious Bastards. All you have to do is kill Hitler and the whole thing falls apart. It's like, no, there's actually maybe 6 years of war before you get to the point, you know, and everything has to be deconstructed afterwards and try and reconstruct. You know, there's a lot more work to go in rather than defeat somebody with a magic book. I wanted to mention this. The narrators, okay narrators.
Multiple.
Because there's one female and one male narrator. So let me just give their names and then I will say good things about them and then bad things about them. Narrated by Sid Sager and Moira Quirk. Sid Sager is British and he doesn't know how to pronounce quite a few words.
Oops.
I mentioned one to you before. They leave some caches of things. I'm like, I don't think they leave caches of things. I think they leave caches of things because a cache is different from a cache.
Mm.
A cache, if you have cache, you've got like status.
Mm.
And if you have a cache of something, it means you've got a store of something.
Yeah.
So they leave caches of things around. I'm like, probably not. But the other thing that he gets mixed up is he doesn't know how to say the word capital. As in, there's two different ways of spelling capital. One is capital, as in the capital city.
Mm-hmm.
And then in American cities, you have a capital building.
Mm-hmm.
And the capital is spelled not capital, it's spelled capitol.
Yeah.
And he, as a British person, doesn't quite understand this. And he's pronouncing everything. They went to the capitol. And he keeps saying it very capital rather than capital.
Okay.
And this is not a main criticism. Well, it is a criticism, but I also did the same wrong thing in one of my books because I wanted to talk about a generic American city, but I didn't want to give away what kind of city it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, it goes up to the state capital. Misunderstanding that the capital, O-L at the end, is a building and a capital is a capital city with an A-L.
Yeah.
So there's a state capital, which is like in Texas is Austin.
Yeah.
And then in Austin is the Capitol building.
Yeah.
But you just pronounce them the same. There's capital and capital. It's like al and al. It's very, in spoken
word.
But he obviously doesn't know this. But also then it reflects really badly on Alex Harrow because she thinks in London there is a Capitol building and there isn't. There's a Parliament building.
Mm.
But then I was like, well, how much do I give her the benefit of the doubt here? Because this is not London. This is the capital city of an empire which is called Dominion, but like kingdom, like United Kingdom, mm-hmm. United, like Dominion, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it's going to be. There's this kind of stuff, and the place names, and it feels very like Arthurian. And again, they don't go to Cambridge, they don't go to Oxford, they don't go to Oxbridge, one of the two universities, Oxbridge.
Yep.
They go to Camford.
Not, that's kind of not a little bit
not Oxford or Cambridge. Camford. So again, it's littered with hints that this is England, you know, and like the Second World War, First World War, World War kind of stuff is very like, you know, British coded.
Right.
And also the like immigration stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. It feels very like British, like immigrate, and the racism, there's a bit of some American racism, but okay, there's some British Empire stuff going on there.
Right.
But all of it is kind of backed up by, I wouldn't say a misunderstanding of British culture and history and everything of what it is. But it did make me feel, this is one of the books, like normally this stuff just passes me by. And in fact, this book didn't annoy me in this way. Mm. It just, because in the end, it felt like bad writing and bad choices.
Mm.
Or she's aiming for something that I don't quite understand by calling it a Capitol building rather than Parliament building.
Right.
And some other bits and pieces that are going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of these like American assumptions mixed into a book which feels like it's trying to be very British.
Right.
And I think I mentioned this to you before.
Yes.
Because I was like, this is what cultural appropriation feels like.
Yeah.
And of course, normally when people are just writing random fantasy or random science fiction or a book set in the Second World War in London, or, you know, like, loads of American authors, loads of authors from all the way around the world write books about Britain, things set in Britain, you know, stuff set during the Second World War. Everyone's doing this stuff about Arthurian legends. Like, mm-hmm. it's like British culture in this way is like international world culture.
Yeah, isn't that literally Diana Gabaldon writing Outlander? She's American.
I don't care. Like, it's not that I've got any issue writing about, like, people do writing about this, because what fantasy is comes from, you know, Tolkien, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Mm-hmm. These are all deeply British forms of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter that, you know, Lord of the Rings is made by a New Zealander or an Australian in New Zealand or whatever it is, you know, and so these people are American. Like, it's not that I care about this, but as I was reading this book or listening to this book and having all of these like fundamental misunderstandings of Britishness, kind of
like
just
the subtle things
which 50% of me was like, oh, she's made a mistake there, and the other 50% of me like, this isn't Britain, this is like a fake country called Dominion, which is at war with other parts of the world or whatever. This is not Britain. But then by dropping in all these things to like Arthurian legend and all these other British things about going, you know, going up to Scotland or whatever, you know, all these different kind of things, which are all part of my life and my identity as a British person, not because I'm proud of it or anything, it's just like my
It's your experience, my history, your lived experience. Yeah.
This is why I wanted to bring up these, you know, guys talking about these children's books. Mm-hmm. It's like people dunking on my children's books of, like, you know, me reading The Sword and the Stone or whatever it's going to be. And you're like deconstructing these myths. And I was like, oh, right. This is like, well, I don't even know what it's like, because, again, when it happens to in other people's countries, cultures and all that kind of stuff. Again, it's not that it's like offended by it. It's just that I was like, it was one of those times where I was like, this feels so careless and it feels so slapdash and it feels like everything is just winking at me. But also, this is my childhood and my national idea. Like, you're playing games with, like, what it means for a nation to have an identity with the nation that I grew up in and spent the first 25 years of my life in.
Yeah, yeah.
And just for that just to be a playground for you to have some yearning MMC and FMC smelling each other's cunts. It's like, I'm like, this is just feels like a... I don't know, it just feels like wrong in a way, which, again, not offended by. I'm just like really disappointed by.
A little bit disrespectful?
No, I don't even care. It's not even something that needs respecting in a way. Well, no, let me put it this way. I wouldn't mind someone being completely disrespectful of British history and empire and all the racism in children's books and all of the sexism and like all of
like
the
showing
stuff.
It all like
if
really...
it's act all of the bad stuff about British history and English history and how the English treated the Scots and how, you know, everyone treated the Irish and how every you know, if it was a book that felt like it was about that, properly about that, and was critical about it, I'd be like, great, me too. I am also critical of the colonial history of Great Britain. I'm like, yes, I agree. But it seems to be trying to make other points about propaganda and history and tyranny and all this kind of stuff, but in a, like a really haphazard way, which felt like it should have been a either... I don't know, just a better writer. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Either a British writer who can write that story. Side note, Piranesi. How about Piranesi? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to have, again, not the same kind of thing at all, but again, playing in the space of children's stories, for very, very British children's stories, literally Lion, the Witch of the Wardrobe and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And The Magician's Nephew, all that kind of stuff going on there. Right, like... right in the heart of the novel of Piranesi. Like, the main characters share the names of the main character, or some of the main and side characters in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and the other Narnia books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going so deep into that and so deep into what would it be like to go through a portal into another world and lose your memories of the world back home, which is what happens in, you know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The kids go over and they actually stay there long enough that they forget that they're from, you know, that they're from our home back here.
Okay.
And it's only when they go, they're all grown up. They're all adult people, kings and queens of Narnia, and then they go on a hunt and a stag chases through and they end up back in the other side of the cupboard and they're children again. They're like, oh, we forgot this life here.
Oops.
And then some of them in there forget the life, and I'm like, Piranesi is grappling with that in a way which feels like it gives meaning and it gives power, like it gives more weight and power to these children's stories.
Yeah.
These, like, you know, generation defining children's stories.
Yeah.
And this book feels so sloppy and slipshod, or whatever the word I'm trying to find here. It feels like you can't just call your main character Mallory and that be it. Like, you can't just talk about, like, this hero is, you know, destined to die and then just do a timey-wimey stuff and then just discard those rules and it's going to be about this, but then it's just like an evil witch with a cauldron and a magic book and a grail or whatever. You know, all of... you've got to... if you're going to address these things, just do it. Do it carefully. And it can't just be the backdrop. Or if it is just the backdrop to... a love story, like a romance story.
Yeah.
Make sure it's done well enough. Again, bringing it back to the Ministry of Time, Callie and Bradley, a big backdrop of that is that it takes a year for them to fuck the first time because she wants to go through a year in like accelerated climate change and like near future-y kind of stuff.
Right.
So that there's a really bad heat wave is part of the story and is also part of the thing that brings those two characters together because they're living together through a heat wave.
Yeah.
And how they act around each other when there's a heat wave is different from when it's snowing outside.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn. And in this book, like, all we do is have them going north on a horse three times. And in that part of the story, all of this other stuff is left behind.
Mm.
And it's just not there. Then it's just about how well he can smell her cunt. And I'm like, don't, that can't be the focus of the book. And it is.
Hmm. And this is the bit that's written from the second person?
Yes. He didn't smell her cunt. He almost smelt, I almost smelt your cunt. Well, Juliana's got a big frown on her face. That's how I felt listening to these audiobooks.
Sitting on a horse?
She, I don't know, they were having a bath or whatever. I don't even know about that point. No. But again, the expression on your face when I just dropped the C-bomb is the expression on my face when the C-bomb just dropped in this book. I'm like, and then it was like another 4 hours of the audiobook or something before they actually had sex for the first time. I was like, now you can drop the C-bomb. Now, this is okay.
Mm.
But don't do it when it's a creepy guy who's written the dating profile of the girl he's already infatuated with based on the dating profile that he himself wrote about her. Anyway, didn't finish the
book. This is all really
weird. Didn't finish the book.
Okay.
Let's give it one star for having an idea which kept me engaged for a bit.
How far did you get into it?
I don't know. What did I say here?
You didn't say it.
Oh, no. I need to go home.
Where did this... Home.
Home.
Let's
Goodreads
go home.
Home. I said I got 80% into the book.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like I was in the final stretch. I was going to come up to the final stretch where they're going to have a child and then the child is going to be... Again, this is me just hypothesizing about the end of the book. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a child. The child is going to be held hostage by the evil queen witch.
Mm.
And then they're going to have to go and defeat her because they're trying to escape her, but there has to be a reason for them to go back. So either one of them is something and then one of them turns out to be their own father. No, probably not. That's the kind of
I'm guessing the child is then going to go to the empire and defeat fascism.
Yeah, something about the child. Anyway, there's my review of the book, one star.
That's really disappointing because this was the best book of the best of the best.
This was the highest rated book of the collection of seven books that I thought on all these lists were the ones that appealed to me the most. And I tell you something, I'm going to move on quite quickly to Slow Gods by Claire North and Halcyon Years by Alistair Reynolds because I'm not sure if I don't want this to spoil me for romanticy because I think because there's stuff in this book where I was like, well, if this was done right, I'd enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't. None of it was done right.
There's like some good romanticy out there.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna start reading the Highlander. No, not Highlander. Different kind of
also,
Scottish.
Also romanticy. Also romanticy.
Could be.
To be honest.
So
that in the 90s.
So yeah, if anyone's listening and has got some like romanticy, which is like either like I want it to be, I know what to say, just give me like better, like the more romance or better romance. And if there's some like knights and dragons, sure, I'll read that as well. But like, I'd much rather the actual romance part be good.
Yeah, you actually need two people who are actually really yearning for each other for the right reasons.
Again,
because they like the other person they are.
One of the main things that I talked about in the review of Ministry of Time was that the main guy there,
the Arctic explorer
comes back. You're like, well, I can see why people like this guy. You know what I mean? Like, I can be like, well, he's cool. I can definitely see why Callie and Bradley wrote fan fiction about an Arctic explorer and then turned it into a novel. Because this guy is great.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's good with a gun. He's chivalrous. He's rugged. He's good
looking.
He's charming. He's actually funny. Like the things he was saying, like in the book written for him by the author. Sort of like, this guy's got a great sense of humor. You're like, I can totally see why our author insert, because she doesn't have a name in the book, so whatever her name was.
Yeah.
I could totally understand why she's got the hots for this guy. And in this book, I was just like, wow, both of these people are pretty miserable. Anyway, so
one star, you didn't finish.
One star, people, please recommend some romanticy to me, which doesn't make me a quarter of way into the book already kind of be disappointed with the time travel aspect and bore me with the same part of the boring part of the love story told twice from two different points of view. Let's get over that. And also, British. Maybe I have anxiety about having my cultural appropriation as well. And I want people to do it better. If you're going to appropriate my culture, please do it well, not badly. Thank you. Only two of my friends on Goodreads have read and reviewed this.
All right.
Linguana, I don't say this lightly, but this book is perfection, 5 stars.
Okay.
Margaret, another excellent read from Alex Harrow. Like a cross of Arthurian legend, Doctor Who, the ones who walk away from Emilus, a lady knight and a cowardly academic get stuck in a gruesome time loop of legends and authoritarian regimes, but find hope and life everlasting in one another's arms. Yes. I sometimes don't like books with time loops. They get too repetitive, but this one is excellently written. If you want some excellently written sentences about a very boring journey with two people on a horse, this book is for you.
Okay. Well, for some people, that is what they want.
It is quite well written. Boring story or not good story. So thank you very much, Linguana and Margaret. I followed your advice, written in November and January, and I disagree with it. But look at this graph of community reviews. Look at that.
Maybe
12,475 star reviews.
My suspicion is that lots of people know the author already from other books and are really just into what they write.
Yeah, maybe. I just realized Alex Harrow has put a review of her own book here.
Really? No.
Yeah.
What? Why?
Oh, no, it's a list of content warnings.
Oh.
It's a list of content and trigger warnings. I've never found an ideal place to list content warnings, but if you're Googling this book looking for a list, hopefully this will pop up. Hey, that's really good fun.
I quite like that idea.
Violence and injury, as in warfare, anxiety and panic attacks, multiple characters' death, including the deaths of central characters. Spoilers! Racism, sexism, homophobia, and xenophobia in a secondary world setting. Pregnancy and childbirth. Imperiled, abandoned children. Hey, that's what I was saying. One of the children is imperiled. Death of a parent. Animal death. Open bracket, off screen. Close bracket. Dysphoric emotions about gender. So
okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Anyway,
it's kind of a weird.
Please note, as an adult book, it also includes things like sex and strong language. I do not offer to choose specific content warnings or rate them on a scale because, frankly, the work of labeling books clean or dirty is the work of the censor and the fascist, and I shan't be helping them. So there you go. Maybe I should put some explicit content warnings on this, that I'm going to drop the C-bomb at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As if that is a thing.
I don't normally drop the C-bomb out of nowhere.
Come on. What's the difference between literary dick swinging and...
Different, again...
come on, we are not known to be like shy with the words that we're using, and then suddenly there's this C-bomb. I've never even heard that you call it the C-bomb. Yeah, like what? I'm now really hesitant of like just saying words because suddenly you said that the C-word is
the
like,
C-word.
What is happening?
To be honest, I thought by the end of this, I might drop the C-bomb myself. No, I didn't. I'd only said the C-word at the start when talking about the smell of her lady parts.
Literally, you said it just in the last 10 minutes twice.
Yes, I was saying, but I foreshadowed that I might say it later on.
That's true. You did?
Not intentionally, because I
but
didn't.
But this is in this book.
Yeah, it's in the book.
And we talk about the
like
books.
Like at a weirdly inappropriate point. That... I don't want people telling stories to each other in second person that they could smell the odors of their lady parts. It's like, when in your relationship would you tell people that before you had sex for the first time and that you weren't even a couple or anything, that you could smell their lady parts?
I find that quite...
I know. Let's move on.
Okay.
Should we finish the review?
I just literally at the beginning said that you couldn't find your end when you do a podcast yourself.
This is the end. We always talk about an hour,
and I said not over an hour, and this is over an hour already.
We finished the review 8 minutes ago.
What's up next?
Shroud by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Oh yes.
Another book from last year, which I've read, and you're waiting for it to come available in the
library
app. We'll do that episode.
Okay. Yeah.
Lives of Bitter Rain is another book by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which is a novella, and we'll review that when I review the next book in that series.
Okay.
So I'll collect it together, because it's like a novella which goes with a later novel.
Okay.
I've also read Anathem by Neal Stephenson and Inversions by Ian and Banks. And I'd like to talk to you maybe about Anathem.
Wow, we're so behind.
We've talked about Inversions in the past, so maybe I'll just leave that. These are rereads for the list.
Okay.
And then now I don't actually know what book I was going to read next. I'm really struggling to find Finity's End as an ebook or audiobook. It just doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't.
I found some links to it, but the company which used to have it as an ebook doesn't exist anymore, it feels like. So CJ Cherry might not make it onto the SFBRP must reads list with that book, because one of the things is books that are still available to easily read today, and if it isn't, so
it's not.
I might reread Foreigner by CJ Cherry, which is the first book in her other big series,
right,
and see if that one will get in, because I know it's more kind of science fiction-y fantasy, but I think that might be my way of getting CJ Cherry onto the SFBRP must reads
list as a representative book
of hers. Yes,
yeah,
but I have to read, I've not read it since like the 90s, but it was the first book in like many books in that series. So
yes.
Might as well give it a go.
All right.
That's it. You can follow me on Instagram and on Blue Sky and on Mastodon and etc. Be our friends on Goodreads and head over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads if you want to recommend a podcast that you want me to listen to.
Or books.
In the books I would like to see reviewed. And in the books I would like to see reviewed, please put in your favorite fantasy romance.
Yes.
Which isn't trying to be clever. I mean, I want it to be clever, trying to be clever fantasy romance rather than trying to be clever about something else, but then actually marketing itself as fantasy romance.
Cool.
That's it.
All right.
Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.